Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the weekly show and also founder of Yes to Life, the integrative cancer care charity that helps people with cancer in the UK learn about the many powerful ways they can help themselves by taking an integrative approach to their care and recovery. Integrative oncology is the result of, first, the development of complementary and alternative medicine, or CAM, and then the combining of CAM with mainstream oncology to produce a synthesis, the best of both worlds. When I started Yes to Life more than 20 years ago, one of the pioneers pushing the boundaries of what's possible outside of conventional medicine was Dr. Nicolas Gonzalez. He became well known for the spectacular results he was able to achieve with some of the most deadly cancers, and was not backward in coming forward to tell the world about the knowledge he'd accrued. But 10 years later, he was to die in the most unexpected manner, leaving his wife, Mary Beth Gonzalez, with his legacy. Today, I'm speaking to Mary Beth about that legacy and what she's been doing with it. Beth, it's a pleasure and an honor to have you as my guest on the Yes to Life show.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Robin.
So Yes to Life's been operating since 2005, and I was soon to appreciate when I set it up that Gonzalez was one of the big names when it came to pushing the boundaries of what was possible for people with cancer. As for anyone who's working independently of the system at that time, he was, of course, a highly controversial figure, and many people who set themselves up as what are called quack busters roundly dismissed him as a charlatan and did their very best to discredit him and finally bury his findings as best they could. So your husband, Dr. Nicolas Gonzalez, was to die in a very untimely manner in 2015. I can well remember the shock of the announcement at that time. But you decided to, as you say, proudly carry the torch for him. So what made you decide that? Why do you feel that was so important?
Well, it was particularly important because Nick's story wasn't finished. I mean, the idea that he died so unexpectedly, you know, it shocked all of us. And he had hundreds of patients who were actively relying on him for treatment. And so there wasn't a succession plan. And I had been his wife for 15 years, and you couldn't really be married to Nick and not know all about his work, because that's pretty much what he talked about. And I was also fascinated. I was a patient myself for preventative reasons since our third date, if you can believe it.
Right. Okay.
So it was very
you didn't escape.
Right. So it was very important to me when I inherited his medical practice to make sure that people could still have access to this healing treatment. And then as I launched the Nicolas Gonzalez Foundation, I wanted to try to educate other doctors like Dr. Sarper Diller, who you've met, who is based in London and Istanbul, so that patients actually had access to this treatment for, you know, indefinitely.
Mm. Okay, great. So, going back to 2015, and not that long before his death was announced, he came to London to speak here, and I was due to attend. I had a ticket. I was booked in, but I'd never met him in person before. I was really looking forward to it. And other circumstances crashed in. I wasn't able to go. And I was completely gutted, especially when I realized later that I'd missed my only opportunity. So, yeah, it was a bit of a tragedy there. So I never got to meet him in person. But I've watched a lot of videos of him speaking and everything. I know how passionate he was about his subject and a very sharp character he was. He was obviously incredibly knowledgeable and experienced. Yeah, so a term that gets used not unkindly to describe someone such as Dr. Gonzalez is maverick. I looked up the official definition of maverick, and I got a person who shows independence of thought and action, especially by refusing to adhere to the policies of a group to which he or she belongs. I thought it was a pretty apt description in his case. I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, we like the term maverick. In fact, that's why we called his official biography the Maverick MD. I never actually asked Nick what he thought about the term, but he didn't really consider himself to be a rebel. He just saw that he was following the truth, and wherever that led, and that's the way he was trained in medicine as a research scientist. So yes, people considered him controversial. But he just felt like he was doing what was honest and true and what was working.
Yeah, I certainly got that impression. So obviously you came into his life 15 years before he died. And I'm just wondering what your path was, what you brought to the table, so to speak, what your own personal experiences and how much that's influenced what you're doing now.
So I was fascinated with Nick's work from the very beginning. And so I went on the protocol myself. And then as time progressed and Nick was doing more lectures around the world and publishing books, it became clear to me that he needed a marketing assistant, so to speak. And even though I had my own full-time job, I got actively involved in helping with selling his books and preparing his lectures. You mentioned that you almost went to one of his lectures. Well, for a long period of time, Nick didn't even have any slides for his lectures.
No, I just leave it.
And he would just speak off the top of his head. Of course, he memorized what he was going to say. He would practice in his office for hours before every lecture. But I convinced him that maybe if I just made a couple of slides, it might help people better understand what he was talking about. Because people learn differently, right? And he
they
spoke
do.
So quickly. So one of my roles was to create his presentations. And I have to say, I'm really thankful that I did all of that work and side by side with him when he was alive, because then when he passed on and I decided to take on the role of not just educating people about the protocol, but also helping patients understand how it could help them, I had firsthand knowledge. And when we created the educational seminar in 2021 to teach doctors how to actually do the Gonzales protocol, I was able to rely a lot on my understanding of his work, from a firsthand perspective.
Yeah, that was very fortunate. Okay, so the story of your late husband, it was well documented 20 years ago. I knew what was happening with him. I followed his work and everything. But I'm just thinking that maybe his story is not quite so familiar to listeners today. I'd love to hear it from you, going right back to the part played by Dr. John Beer, Dr. William Donald Kelly, how it all moved towards his work eventually. Can you just start at the beginning?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Could I just explain for a minute what the protocol is? Because I don't want to just assume that people know.
Sure.
So essentially, the Gonzales protocol is an individualized nutritional enzyme therapy that Nick developed, but he stood on giants, people like Dr. John Beard and Dr. William Donald Kelly, who created some of the foundations for this work. And our protocol is essentially based on a few core principles, the idea that cancer is systemic, that your metabolism really matters, and that people are nutritionally and metabolically different, and that we are trying our best to support the body's regulatory systems and put them into balance. Now, the work began with the Scottish embryologist, Dr. John Beard. And Dr. Beard was a very interesting fellow. So he wrote a book back in 1914, I believe. And he essentially had developed the concept that cancer develops from a very specific type of embryonic cell. It's called the trophoblast. It's essentially the early stage of the placenta. And that, and his theory is that it, you know, the trophoblast's job is to create a firm anchor between a baby and the mother, and that the blood supply is then used as an exchange for nutrients and waste. Well, he observed that the trophoblast invades the pregnant mother's womb, acting very much like a cancer in the way a cancer invades, and it invades the tissue, and then the trophoblast actually creates its own blood supply. So he also observed, and you know, think about him observing this under the microscope back in the early 1900s.
Yes.
That there was one key difference between cancer and a trophoblast, and that is that the cancer can keep on invading, but for some reason the trophoblast stops. At a very early point in pregnancy, the trophoblast changes from this invasive tissue into a mature placenta. So what does this really mean? So basically, Dr. Beard recognized that this change is happening on the exact same day that the baby in the womb starts making its own pancreatic enzymes. And why would this be happening? Because this is months before a baby even needs to digest food. They're still, you know, attached to the mother in the womb. So the idea is that the trophoblast model of cancer is more like what we would call an adult stem cell today. It's a dormant trophoblast cell that has been seeded somewhere in the body, that has lost its regulatory normal signals and is wrongfully signaled, and it's therefore expressing the attributes back to that original trophoblastic cell. So what do you do about that? You add a significant amount of pancreatic enzymes into your system so that the body can re-regulate and more properly differentiate these trophoblastic cells, and therefore the cancer dies. And so this is the theory, and Dr. Beard was, you know, he was unfortunately sidelined back in the early 1900s because of the public's and the scientists' interest in Madame Curie and her radiation theory. Much sexier concept, right?
Absolutely.
So Beard's work basically was, even though he was, you know, nominated for many awards, it was sidelined. And it wasn't until the 1960s when the rather controversial orthodontist, Dr. William Donald Kelly, entered the picture. And Dr. Kelly was Nick's mentor. They met because Nick needed, he was asked to interview Dr. Kelly to try to see if what Dr. Kelly was claiming was actually true. And the claims were that he was curing some of the most, you know, late stage cancers purely through this nutritional metabolic approach and using pancreatic enzymes. Well, Nick had been a journalist before he went to medical school, and he was actually a journalist at Time Inc., and he was sent down to Texas to basically to debunk what Dr. Kelly was saying, right?
Right. Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah.
And he started looking at the files, and the hundreds and hundreds of patient files and having long discussions with Kelly. And what he saw was that it really appeared as if Dr. Kelly was reversing cancer with this non-toxic approach. And he was so interested in it that he came back to Sloan Kettering, where Nick was working at the time. And he met with his mentor there, who was Robert Good, who was the head of Sloan Kettering, and asked if he could do a research project on Dr. Kelly and investigate it. Because he thought that you know, any type of exceptional story needed investigation, right? And he had hundreds of patient stories that he wanted to look into. So he spent nearly 5 years working essentially in Dr. Kelly's home. And you know, Nick approached it as a serious research scientist. He met with the patients. He went through the files. And he ultimately wrote a book called One Man Alone, which highlighted the top 50 cases that he thought deserved to be acknowledged. And he included in his book all the medical records. So, you know, he walked so proudly into back into Dr. Good's office with his manuscript and all the evidence, like, this is really working. I've proven it. And we need to investigate this more fully. And unfortunately, Dr. Kelly, even though he was very on board with this work being publicized, he became quite devastated when the scientific community did not agree with Nick's findings. And nobody would publish the book. Dr. Good had his own issues with a recent situation involving fraud in his office, and he just didn't want to take the risk. And unfortunately, given the high expectations that Kelly had for this work to be published and acknowledged by Sloan Kettering, and then when that was crushed, the relationship between Kelly and Gonzalez really fell apart. So that's when Nick picked up and moved to New York City and started his own private practice using the original concepts that Kelly had used of, you know, individual diets, individual supplementation, pancreatic enzymes, individual detoxification. And Nick started seeing patients.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you.
You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose,
protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Were they both working in parallel for a while then?
They were. And at that time, so Nick was in New York City and he was evaluating patients individually and designing programs to balance their autonomic nervous system the way he was originally taught by Dr. Kelly. But Dr. Kelly took a different path for a variety of reasons and really simplified his program going forward. So he no longer created individualized programs. He put everybody on the same program. Which is another reason why Nick had to break paths with Kelly, is because he just didn't see that was working and he couldn't support it.
How interesting. So in a way, he sort of picked up the mantle from Kelly's earlier work then and carried on with that. Interesting that, that Kelly should take that step of sort of depersonalizing it, essentially. It's like it's somewhat the opposite direction to the whole move of cancer treatment, which is getting more and more specific and personalized. So, very interesting. And I mean, as you say, he was documenting this huge number of cases very carefully and specifically, and using his journalistic skills and his science skills. I just wondered, out of interest, was it was seen that this method worked better for some types of cancer or better for some stages of cancer, or, you know, whether there's any broad guidelines about who it was applicable to or whether it was a sort of catch-all?
Well, in Nick's files, there are success cases with every single type of cancer, as well as other degenerative diseases. And yet, of course, there are going to be stories of people who did not do well. That's very logical that not everybody does well on this program.
Sure.
Some of the reasons why people might not do well is that this is a type of program that is very self-regulated and self-administered. So our doctors who are continuing this work today, they'll design a program in the same way that Nick did, but then the patient does it at home by themselves. So there's always the chance that, the patient is not able to completely follow the program. And it's not as easy as like sitting in a chair and getting chemotherapy in your arm, right? And watching TV. You have to be actively involved. So also it's important to, make sure that I explain that we know that cancer is really complex. And so while some patients did remarkably well and some stabilized, some didn't respond, despite their tremendous efforts. But this is no different than in, conventional oncology. There are no guarantees.
No.
But we have tremendous long-term survivor stories. And one of the reasons why Nick spent so much time, and as his wife, I can tell you, nights and weekends, writing and documenting his long-term survivor stories. And that's why with the new podcast that we've launched called Your Way Back, we are telling these long-term survivor stories.
Yes. Well, that's, of course, what made all the news. That's why I knew about his work, is because, yes, he was achieving remissions with the worst cancers that were considerably better than any sort of standard statistic would lead you to expect. So, he certainly got extraordinary results in that way. Something you've mentioned already is about the kind of personalizing aspect of Dr. Gonzalez's work was something that's still not widely embraced, it was quite unusual at the time, was his reliance on what's called metabolic typing. I wonder if you'd explain the principles of metabolic typing and how important you think that is to his protocols.
So it was, it was and still is completely critical to our whole approach. So the concept of metabolic typing is that disease occurs when the autonomic nervous system is out of balance. And yet we were originally designed to be in balance and be able to fight off disease while we're in that state of balance. And there are a lot of different reasons why a body can get out of balance. It could be partially because of stress. It could be from, you know, genetics. It can also be from eating the wrong diet that's not appropriate for your type. So one of the very first things that we do is using some proprietary testing that we have, and it's the same testing that Nick used throughout his entire career, is we determine what somebody's metabolic type is, and that ranges all the way from being more alkaline to being more acid, and which we then term as being more sympathetic dominant, being more parasympathetic dominant. And with various stages in between, some people can be balanced and be more in the middle, and that is ultimately the goal. Well, our doctors are going to be metabolically typing the patient and then designing a diet and a supplement and a detox program, all intended to bring that body into balance.
Got you.
And when I started the foundation in the Nicholas Gonzalez Foundation in 2015, one of the questions that I was most asked was, I don't have cancer, but I just want to know what I'm supposed to be eating. So we launched in partnership with the Kelly team, by the way. We launched a metabolic typing test that you can take on our website. It's online digital test. It's about 100 questions that help us determine what your metabolic type is, and then you are given an 18-page customized report on exactly what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat so that you can stay in balance.
Interesting. And is this a problem you feel that's been exacerbated by the tendency for populations to move around the planet much more than they used to, and therefore live in a completely different environment and eating maybe completely different food?
Well, there definitely is a genetic connection to what your metabolic type should be. We often find that patients who are like Eastern European are more parasympathetic dominant, and that people who come from, say, the Andes are more sympathetic dominant. And it has a lot to do with what were the available food sources for them to thrive in those environments at that time. But yes, as we evolve and become more of a melting pot, it does become more complicated, and people's their original genetics are not as easy to determine. So that's why this test helps, because you can't just say, okay, somebody comes from Eastern European background, therefore they should be on a more carnivore diet.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. Yes, it's a complex picture.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling. Cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So I can well remember that close to the end of his life, Dr. Gonzalez was hugely frustrated about what was occurring as a result of his efforts to get his protocol scientifically scrutinized. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, again, as a research scientist, he felt that it was incredibly important for his work to be evaluated. And, you know, he knew that he was getting great results. And certainly the patients knew, but he wanted it to be recognized in scientifically. And so he made great efforts to have his work formally evaluated. And he actually was awarded a very unusual and one of the largest alternative medicine studies ever to be created. It was done by the National Cancer Institute and the National Institute of Health. And he went into that this study of pancreatic cancer and very optimistic because he was seeing such great results in his own practice. And, you know, in hindsight, you could say Nick was a little bit naive, but the original people that worked with him on designing that study seemed to have the same interests in mind. But unfortunately, that study, well, it remains very controversial and complex. Nick felt strongly that the study design didn't accurately reflect how he practiced clinically, particularly regarding patient selection and how the treatment was implemented, and then how people would follow up with their protocols. When that study went awry, he wrote a 583-page award-winning book in classic Dr. Gonzalez style. It's called What Went Wrong, and he wanted to explain it all. Robin, regardless of the differing interpretations of that trial, you know, we believe that the larger body of our documented patient cases and our long-term survivors, they still really deserve thoughtful examination, and as well as the success of the new patients that we have been working with for the last few years.
So they stand on their own. Absolutely right. But of course, case series like that carry a lot more weight with patients than they do with the scientific community, because patients want answers, what's actually working. And other people who've maybe faced the same situations as themselves and done much better than expected are bound to be of interest. So, it's one of those things you can sort of imagine, well, what would the scientific community have done if this trial had come out on top looking great? I mean, it would have messed things up, wouldn't it? Let's face it. It wouldn't have been good for conventional medicine. And so in a way, it was set up to fail, it seems to me. It's not the first time such a thing's happened, after all. You know, we've got examples of like the Mayo Clinic 1970s vitamin C trial, where they were supposed to be finding out if high dose vitamin C was actually really did what they said. And they were giving 5 grams orally to patients and then saying it doesn't work. It doesn't even have the same mechanism of action, 5 grams orally, as, you know, 75 grams intravenously. So, you know, it was just a way of saying it doesn't work, essentially. So, unfortunately, there is this enormously protective mechanism around conventional medicine that means that, you know, not too many jobs or anything else are going to be likely to suffer. So it's a tragic thing. And I can quite understand why your husband might have been upbeat and optimistic about it, particularly if the initial people he worked with were actually for real. But, you know, so easy for those things to get hijacked by some larger forces.
And those people were reassigned to other projects.
Right.
Shortly after they started. So this is why Nick then just started writing. And he was originally planning to write 150 of his most exceptional cancer case stories. Well, he got as far as writing 119. And so when he died, they were unpublished, but they were in his computer. And so I took on the responsibility and really the honor of having that work edited by other doctors and then published. And so we have a 2-volume series called Conquering Cancer, and it covers pancreatic cancer, breast cancer, and then 19 other types of cancer. And you know, you asked the question earlier if there's any types of cancer where he did not see success. And sometimes when people look at these books and they say, oh, well, I don't see brain cancer here. Well, it's simply because he ran out of time. I mean, he was planning to write up those cases, but he died so unexpectedly.
Mm. Well, maybe somebody will pick up that piece of work as well. Interesting. So since he died, I mean, the science has moved a lot. As has the environment in which, tragically, more and more and more people, of course, are being diagnosed with cancer. And some of the significant contributors to that change have been things like the common access to genetic data now, the growth in the evidence of the mind-body connection, the greater respect for dietary factors and dietary interventions than there used to be. It's notable that even the mainstream cancer organizations are now saying 40% of cancers are preventable with lifestyle change. And other people, of course, say far, far more than that. That's a super conservative figure. So, you know, I was having a look, and in the highly dismissive and heavily quackbuster-informed Wikipedia entry for Dr. Gonzalez, it says, Gonzalez believed that cancer was caused by a poor diet, a problem compounded when one does not eat a diet that corresponds to one's metabolic type, and that environmental pollution and daily stress contributed to health problems. The Gonzalez regimen proposed as a treatment a cure-orientated change in lifestyle and nutrition. Well, in today's climate, that doesn't sound so controversial, really, to me. It's like, do you think that Dr. Gonzalez suffered unduly from being ahead of his time?
Most certainly. A lot of the concepts that he was talking about, 20, 25 years ago, are very common today. And I hear that from doctors who reach out to me and say, I want to learn the Gonzalez protocol because now it all makes sense.
Right. Yeah, well, that's right. Things have moved on. And, it's heartening, even though, of course, it's taken years and years to see that finally nutrition is beginning to be taken seriously in some quarters. You know, the microbiome has been a kind of Trojan horse that has piqued up interest in the scientific community because of its ability to affect the treatment with drugs, you know, radically. And, you know, they have to take notice of that. So, it's beginning to be taken seriously. I mean, the ketogenic diet has done much to actually make dietary interventions something that are not just stupid, they're taken seriously. So, things are moving on. It's deathly slow, not nearly fast enough to keep up with the rate at which cancer is increasing, but change has been happening.
It's been happening, Robin, but what we haven't seen yet is the idea of metabolic individuality. And you know, maybe people are being told that nutrition is important, but being on the wrong nutrition is just as bad as, you know, not doing, you know, any nutrition at all.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I see that. Yeah, I mean, there's much talk of genetic individuality these days, but I don't hear people speaking about metabolic individuality in the same way that you are. So, yeah, it is very interesting. And you're right, somebody could be doing something very counterproductive for their own metabolism.
The other thing I'd like to mention is that our environment has gotten much more toxic in the 10 years since Dr. Gonzalez died. And so our environmental burden is much higher. The effects of EMFs is much more significant. And so I think that, today, Dr. Gonzalez would agree with what we are doing, which is putting an even higher importance on detoxification to help mediate that. And some people ask me, like, well, what are the things that you've done to evolve the Gonzalez protocol in the last 10 years? And one of the most significant things that we've done is we've added infrared sauna therapy, especially for our sympathetic dominant patients.
Mm. Interesting. Well, yeah, I completely agree. The situation's sort of getting exponentially worse. So it needs responding to. So look, we've just got a few minutes left. So I wonder if you could tell us a bit about your work now, about the aims of the Nicholas Gonzalez Foundation.
So our key work right now is getting the word out about the Gonzalez Protocol being available to patients around the world. And that's one of the reasons why we created the podcast, Your Way Back, as we want to be able to give people the hope that's, you know, grounded in reality and let them have access to real conversations, patients who have been on the protocol, patients who are just starting the protocol, so that they can understand that not only do we have this opportunity for them to see doctors and be treated from anywhere around the world by the Gonzalez Protocol, but that the protocol is still very actively being practiced clinically. And so the podcast, Your Way Back, is creating space for these conversations about lifestyle and metabolism and emotional resilience and individuality. And we're just trying to help those people who may believe that we need to restore human complexity to the cancer conversation, and that's where individuality really comes to play.
Hmm. Right. Okay. So, so you've got a podcast. You have a website, presumably, which is
we have several websites.
Okay, would you like to share those?
The main website for the foundation is the Gonzalez Protocol, and you'll see not only an explanation of what the protocol is there, but also a lot of Nick's original writings and videos. Yeah. Then we have a publishing website where all of Nick's books are available. That's called newspringpress.com.
Okay.
And there are 9 different books, including a cookbook that I wrote.
Okay.
And then we have a service oriented website called GonzalezGuidance.com. And that's where you can take that metabolic type test that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. It's also where we make available the pancreatic enzymes that Nick specially formulated for his patients. They're now only available through a small private company called Professional Formulas, and you access them by going through our GonzalezGuidance.com website, and then you can actually have the same pancreatic enzymes that work so effectively for Nick's patients and our patients today.
Mm, interesting. And in terms of somebody who's a cancer patient who's looking for a practitioner who could help them, how do they go about that?
So on the foundation's website, thegonzalezprotocol.com, there's a special area where you that says apply here. And it explains all the different things that we would like to know as you are going to basically prepare an application to be considered for this treatment. And, you know, application sounds so harsh. And we like, why can't everyone just do this program? Well, what we have found is that we don't want anybody to start doing this program and not realize that it is very involving and it will require you to make changes to your lifestyle. And we don't want anyone to be surprised.
No.
So in the application process, we make sure that they understand exactly what would be expected of them. And we also don't want to give any false hope. So in the application process, we ask to review your medical records and hear in your own words your story of what it is that you're trying to, the problems that you're trying to solve medically. And then we'll be honest about whether we think we can help you or not.
Mm.
We don't take on any patient that we don't believe we can help. And that, you know, that's really following in Nick's model. He was so busy, he didn't have time or any interest in misleading people. So we only take on patients that we truly believe can thrive on this program.
Mm, makes complete sense. And just out of interest, on your podcast, are you able to feature anybody who was actually a patient of Nick's?
Absolutely. In fact, so there are 12 podcasts that are out right now, and the first 7 are all about the foundational work and the understanding of the protocol. And then we went into what we call the proof series, and that involves current patients and telling of their stories. And then after the 15th episode, you will start to hear from more individual patients.
Mm.
But we also, you know, you don't have to wait. We have testimonials on our website, both video testimonials of current patients and written testimonials. And there are also a whole lot of historical stories on our website.
Mm. Great. Great resource. All right. Well, look, time's up. And thanks very much indeed for coming on the show. I feel like, okay, I never met Nick at the end, as it happened. I feel like I got a bit of an inside story talking to you today, which has been really nice. So thank you very much indeed for coming on.
Well, thank you, Robin.
Okay. Bye-bye then. Bye-bye. Getting to speak to people like Mary Beth Gonzalez is one of the great perks of this job. Hers is a fascinating story, and we all need to be truly thankful for pioneers like Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez for creating some credible ground outside of conventional care that's now providing the foundations of integrative oncology, a whole new discipline of care with far greater potential than mainstream or indeed any other approach alone. Thanks for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to bring the voices of key figures in integrative oncology to you each week, and I hope you'll want to listen again next week when I'll be back with another of those expert guests in the next edition of the Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.